Heavy Networking welcomes Steinze to the podcast. Steinze is a network engineer who loves network automation. He's given talks at the live AutoCon events put on by the Network Automation Forum, and he's pretty entertaining. We've got him here today to discuss the network automation landscape webpage that he's created, as it's a monster and needs some parsing. I am Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conroy Murray. You can follow us on LinkedIn, Blue Sky, and the Packet Pushers Community Slack channel, and please do. A quick housekeeping item for you. The Packet Pushers have a merch store now. store.packetpushers.net, and get yourself something nice. We've been pretty happy with the hoodies, hats, tees, and so on that we've sampled. The quality, honestly, they're solid. Everything we've been getting back from the store that we've worked with, it's solid stuff. As far as we can tell, they ship worldwide as well. So again, store.packetpushers.net. Check it out. End of housekeeping. Steinze, over to you, man. Welcome to Heavy Networking. Would you tell the nice people out there who you are and what you do?
Oh, well, hey, Ethan. I'd love to hear more about the threat count on those hoodies, though. You know, let's get some merch in for the people. You know, the kids are hungry for merch. You know, why buy regular clothes when you can buy Packet Pushers merch? That's what I always say.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Give me my money, okay? My name's Steinze. I'm the lead product development engineer at Advania Iceland, and I honestly don't know what that means either, and neither does my employer, which is excellent. So they don't ask any questions, and they also don't want to media train me. I told them you should invest. You know, I might
at least not yet.
Yeah, not yet, but let's see. Or, you know, just, you know, cut ties entirely. But hey, HR, I know you're listening to this. It's good to hear from you. Nice to see you. I can't actually see you. We're on the audio. But I'm the network engineer. So I used to be the principal enterprise network engineer. Then I moved over to network automation, which is, you know, was the rage back in 2018. You know, we didn't even know where we're going. We didn't know what the landscape looked like. And we still don't know what the landscape looks like. And we still don't know where we're going half the time. So, you know, people say a lot has changed in the last five to 6 years. I beg to differ. We seem to be going around in circles. You know, while, you know, we look at the cloud dudes and cloud people, they prefer to be called cloud people now. So we got the Azure people, we got the AWS people, and they're all using their Terraform, and they're all getting stuff done and going home to their kids at 4 p.m. And the network people are still running around with their heads on fire. And, you know, that has not changed in the last 10 years. It has not changed in the last 20 years. At the end of the day, you know, if you're touching metal, you live in a completely different world than the cloud people. So...
Speaking of things being on fire, you're based out of Iceland, and when we were in Denver a couple of weeks or so ago, we were waiting for the keynote to kick off, I think, and you're like, one of our circuits just got taken out by a lava flow. Was that for real? Did that actually happen?
That did actually happen. We actually one of the Far Ice cables, which is one of the many. Wait, sorry, I got to do the Icelandic Tourism Board wants me to take care of this. It is one of got to do the accent. It's one of the many wonderful things about Iceland and hosting your data there. It is the connectivity you have to the US as well as Europe and Greenland and Faroe Islands. You can enjoy this as well, my friend. So, pitch over. We have pretty much almost free energy with a lot of connectivity. Steady 120 milliseconds ping to New York City, boys. We're going to make some serious money. But yeah, no, that's why you have a triple redundancy, so that when, you know, you actually, like, I don't think many people have been smited like we have just been smited, but I was just incredibly impressed with how well everything just ran. Failover worked right away. Of course it does. I never had any doubt, obviously. But everything just failed over, and you know, what I really want to know is which packet got vaporized, you know, which flow just
What telemetry setting is there for vaporization? I don't know.
You know, like, I wish I had some deep packet inspection going on, because it would be really interesting to see just how TCP behaves under volcano eruption circumstances. So that was a little bit different, but you know, same as the fiber seeking backhoe, right? You know, same mm-hmm. thing, but just a little bit bigger scale and a lot hotter. Oh boy.
So let's talk about this network automation landscape document that you created, because this thing is a beast. As I was reviewing it the other day, I was a little overwhelmed by just the number of tools. It's like, wow, there was most of them I'd heard of on some level or another, and a bunch of them I hadn't even heard of before. Start talking us through this thing. If we read this document, how do you, well, it's a web page. Why don't you tell people how they can find it? And then we need to talk about how to parse it.
Oh boy, that's like, how do you eat an elephant? It's one little bite at a time, right? And, you want to freeze the chunks of the elephant in between, right? So you don't go at this thing head on, right? And, based on the layout right now, which is evolving, it's a community effort. So just to tell you, where the website is, it's at steinze.com/, or just go to steinze.com. It'll be in the show notes. The wonderful thing is that I was able to head on over to the, well, I just spent like the last 18 months in a bit of a Kubernetes haze, really. Finished up some certifications, moved some of our infrastructure, that sort of thing. So there's a lot happening in the Kubernetes space. And a big part of that is the CNCF, or the Cloud Native Compute Foundation. And those lovely people have this landscape tool. It's version 2 that you can just, you pull it down and you can build your own landscapes and be off in a jiffy in a couple of minutes. So in a, as you can hear, it's a caffeine-fueled haze for me most days, and, had a little bit too much of my ADD medication, and before you know it, I'd already, I was halfway through the thing, and it was 3 a.m., and then, of course, I pulled in some of my friends from the Network Automation Forum, Urs and several other wonderful people. You can actually see just who's been contributing, and that's the wonderful thing about having this on GitHub is anybody can move any category around, we can just argue in the comment sections. And so far we've been really lucky with contributions. Now there is some low hanging fruit that's still there. And I'm expecting someone to get text FSM, text finite state machine or something like that into the doc. I'm not taking those on purpose because I'm trying to lure more unsuspecting network engineers into doing pull requests. That's how you get them addicted.
So I just, to give listeners kind of a visual reference, when I look at this, it's not just a list. We've made things on packet pushers that try to assemble stuff, and it tends to be just a list with some text. This, to me, looks almost more like the periodic table in some ways, because it's broken out so nicely and neatly, and each little box that you have things in fits into its own category, and there are subcategories, and then you can click on a pretty box, and it opens up and gives you even more information. So it's there's a lot in here, but it's also just really smartly laid out, and it looks frankly great.
I'll be the first to admit it. I make mistakes all the time. So looks can be really deceiving. Now, the categories, we can argue about them back and forth all day. Like, there's an old saying, there's an old saying that I'm trying to make an old saying, so just go with me on this one. Everybody does config backup. Basically, it doesn't matter what tool it is, 60% or more, it could be taking care of puppies in the middle of the night. It'll do config backup on a Cisco box or, Arista or something like that, right? Uh-huh. So if we create a config backup section and we start putting everything into that, it's going to blow up immediately. So I'm trying to push this towards the thing. Instead of having the same project in multiple categories or having really minutia level, we're the observability platform with an assurance focus as opposed to what? I'm sorry, what's going on? So the thing about the categories is they are kind of deceiving. It's deceit. It's pure deceit. The network source of truth. How do you define these terms and all that? And that's kind of part of the wonderful conversation that's going on at...
Deceit. I mean, some products fall into more than one category.
Right. Both the fact that you can fit multiple things into multiple categories, right? Also, this is coming from my perspective most of the times. Actually, a lot of people have made some very smart changes to the categories. And I'm hoping by the time this airs that I've gotten around to making some even smarter ones, because there are a few that I could not defend if you really started to grill me on them. But step one was, of course, get everything kind of sort of into the landscape, right? Use the tagging system to figure out who does what. The most important thing in my mind is the license level. So is it enterprise software that's licensed? And yeah. There you go. Is it hybrid? Is it some sort of open source?
Full open source and then freemium and...
Yeah, full Richard Stallman, eating toe fungus off your feet, hippie nonsense. And I support those people entirely. They've done wonderful things for everybody, right? The entire world runs on Linux. So it's a wonderful thing. However, I've usually found that, trimming the lists into paid for solutions versus non-paid for solutions is a disservice, because that lets you both have an overview of what the landscape actually looks like. And the fact is that most of the people doing networking, this is part of your job. And what does your job do? It entails money somehow. So if you can save time, time is money, friend, right? So that's why I never skipped the sponsored segments on the Packet Pusher Network. No, sir, I do not press the skip at all. I listen to all of them because, you know, I've made some really, really impressive talks internally just by regurgitating stuff that I hear on this particular podcast. So
you and a lot of people actually have that story that because they listen to the sponsored stuff, that's how they know what to propose for projects and so on. So, but to your point on your network automation landscape, Doc, you're not differentiating. You didn't create separate landscapes for the open source world versus the commercial world. They're all in the same document, and you just have noted what you're getting into. This is open source. This is freemium. This is a commercial product. So you can see each product and group it.
Exactly. And it's flagged at the bottom. So you can see hybrid, you know, where they do like the, you can have 5 devices or 10 devices for free, you know, which is kind of lab oriented stuff. And that's really great if you want to, you know, not engage with the vendor sales team or whatever, and you just want to, you know, kick the wheels on the thing. Man, that's a lot more attractive than having to go, oh, I'm going to go into a 5-week engagement. And then we're going to, you know, and then the vendor is going to try to squeeze you and figure out exactly how much you're worth and, you know, get you sized up. You know, I love my vendors and I know that they have to do this stuff. But, you know, sometimes I just want to do 5 devices in the lab and see, you know, kick the tires of the thing. Or I want to go entirely open source, which is, you know, a lot of the times you want to do a mixture of both, right? You're going to have an enterprise or some sort of solution that's coming to you. You might be an MSP, an enterprise, you know, you're trying to, you know, use off the rack clothing, and you're going to want to put a belt on that thing and, you know, fit it to your size, right? So,
well, for some shops, I think getting budget for a network automation project can be hard. And so the way you avoid that procurement process is you just go with some open source tools. Can I get something done with open source that's, you know, free, exactly, if you will? Free as in, you know, free as in deer, free as in puppy, huh? Who can say?
Child healthcare. I don't know, you know. I actually have that. So, haha, Americans. No.
Thanks for that, buddy. Appreciate it.
That's the only one. Feeling less bad about your lava flow problem now.
I love you guys and your aircraft carriers. I love you, NATO guys. Like, big fan of NATO. I'm NATO. Yeah. We love you.
Don't get too attached. Anyway.
Yeah. I can see them sailing away. Come back. You forgot me, please. It's just me and China. Oh, God. Anyway. Geopolitics aside, the beautiful thing, of course, about, you know, figuring out where you stand in the network automation landscape is, you know, we can go on stage and we can do talks and we can do this and that, but it's always going to be colored by your opinion and your experiences, right? You know, some guy from AWS or Azure that was draining 300 links in a single evening is going to have a different experience to old Steinzy in Iceland, who, you know, I drained 2 or 3 links right at a time. You know, oh, my script does the pre and post checks and all that stuff, right? But it's a different scale and it's a different ball game, right? And it's going to have different priorities. However, if we look at the landscape as a whole, there's a lot of stuff there that's, you know, especially for the smaller shops, which is, I would assume we have a lot more of the audience, which is, you know, either starting out or on their first generation of automation journey. There's a lot of stuff that you can actually get free out of the box with some projects. But a little hint here, when you're dealing with management, you don't sell them an automation project, right? You sell them that you're going to do billing retention or you're going to deliver X value. And that's kind of the thing. We have a, you know, drinking coffee with a lot of people. I drink a lot of coffee with a lot of people, as you can hear, right? The thing is that a lot of people go off and I'm going to do network automation for the sake of network automation and save me time or, you know, do my path project. That's, of course, not how you, this is not how you do business speak, right? You go right to your manager and say, hey, we're probably, you know, we could save some money here if we do this. And if we do this over here, we could save some time, which equals money, right? And framing your use case, like everything has to start with the use case. That's kind of when I get really upset with people where they, you know, we want to use tool X, you know, NetBox or InfraHub or, you know, any of the big, you know, network automation framework names, right? We want to use X. Okay, why do you want to use X? Well, we could maybe do this. All right, get a firm understanding of where your business critical intent lies and then try to automate it. And what you're going to find out is that your business processes are going to have some holes in them. Now, if you're AT&T or something, which, or, you know, you have like 40,000, 50,000, 100,000 devices, and then 1,000+ engineers, your process is going to be very rigid and well-defined, usually, right? but smaller shop.
Well,
but
maybe.
Hopefully for them. Oh, God. I've heard some stories. Not picking on AT&T at all there. Verizon also has some problems. Big vendors have big problems, right? Small vendors also have, or small, you know, telcos have small problems. MSPs, big or small, we all have a similar set of problems, but scaling does affect where we go, where we want to apply the bandages, and, you know, where we want to automate first, or if we even need to automate. Like, does it make sense? Is our stack evolving that fast that anything that we do today is going to be worthless in a year, right? And that's kind of the problem.
So let's say I'm trying to frame up my network automation needs, let's say, and I'm using your landscape document to try to help me work through that. How do I digest this thing? Tell me, what are the segments, the sections, the different categories that I'm going to find on the landscape doc, and what should I be paying attention to the most if I'm getting started with network automation at my company?
So again, you're going to come with me, you're going to come and look at the landscape, and I want you to already have two or three use cases. Like, this is a really valuable thing that I want to do. So let's make up two right now, right? I want to make sure that my network, whatever it is, like, let's say it's an enterprise, and that I have a one-to-one representation between what I have registered here in an Excel sheet, in Mapbox, in something, right, which it could be referred to as a source of truth. The network source of truth is becoming the standard terminology. Mm-hmm. I want to keep a one-to-one relationship with what's actually happening in the environment and what's actually, or what's written down in that box. So serial numbers, number of devices. Maybe you don't need to do everything day one, but a good starting point is you're going to want to have some data. Data is pretty much always the name of the game. So you're going to need something to reference how things are currently. That's your live network. How things should be. That's your source of truth, right? And you want to get that.
Now, okay, so data is what in this case? It could be configuration stanzas at a bare minimum, but you really are asking about or talking about structured code in some way?
I'm talking about modeling. And that's actually a really good mm-hmm. point. This is why you're the podcast host. Modeling is the fundamental thing that we're doing. So we're taking reality, right, which is network automation. Let's say that we have two Cisco routers, right? We could dump the config into Excel or something like that. And we could say, hey, this is how the config should look. That's not super valuable, right, from a business perspective. What we want to do is we want to model the idea of the router. And we want to get away from the old terminology, pets versus cattle. You want to get into the cattle business as fast as humanly possible. So this stops being your pet router number one, pet router number two. These just become router 01, router 02. They have certain modeled fields. You know, usually you would go with the very representative structure. So if we look at NetBox, which is, you know, it's all 8, soon to be 10 years old, right? And it was a mind-blowing thing when it came out, at least to me. Like, I just had, wow, we could actually model, and we could keep the names of the devices and the serial numbers and the interface counts and all this stuff. And we could define services. So we could say, hey, there's a guest network service on this router. And we could maybe have a UUID or some sort of generated field that says, hey, here's this service. And again, this is one of those words that have been abused, service. It can mean a lot of things. When I say service, I mean a solution. And you're buying the guest network solution from me. Then we're going to put a UUID, a little special code, and we're going to mark the configuration, the interface in value inside a NetBox, and everything that's related to this solution. And that might be on this router. That might be on the switch that's connected to it. Again, you can go on and on and on. And that's when you start, you know, modeling your environment inside of some sort of, meta framework, or, you know, a sort
now
of.
In NetBox, it provides that framework for me. That is, I can instantiate an object, and it's going to give me a bunch of fields that I can populate, and I can do that by hand, which is tedious, but I can. I could model right down to racks and rack units and have my whole data center modeled in that way.
Exactly.
If I'm coming at it from a networking perspective, as I'm looking at your landscape document, is there some tooling that's going to help me get my data from my network into NetBox?
And that's the fundamental thing. Step one, you get that model. Step two, you're going to want to, again, if you have two routers, you could do by hand, like you said, or you can start the synchronization journey. Now, many people come at this from a different way. The way that I did it, the last time I did it was, we went to our monitoring system, and we just started scraping data directly from our SMP monitoring system. So that had SSH, so that had config backups in it, that had device counts. We had everything pre-configured from our again, we used the SNMP monitor. I believe it was Observium at the time, but we've moved to another system. I'm not happy with, and I won't be mentioning because you know what you did. So you can get data at some point. I assume you're monitoring your network, most of you, and if so, you have a monitoring system. Step one is usually, or a good step one, is to get data from that and synchronize that into NetBox automatically, or your source of truth, whatever it may be. So there you can get your serial numbers, you can get your device counts. And the beautiful thing about modeling your environment, and again, the issue with NetBox is it's very opinionated, and there are some constraints to that, which you, again, once you're starting to hit that those, you're so advanced that old Steinency can't really help you much. You should be telling me what to do, honestly, if you know about all those constraints. And, you know, when you get to the edge of the rainbow and you start looking behind the curtain and you see the Wizard of Oz sitting there, you know, working his machine, and you realize it's not magic, it's all just data at the end of the day. It's a little disheartening and disillusioned. You know, disillusionment will hit, but realize the value that you have created for your organization and your enterprise compared to the olden days of, oh, the config on the device is the source of truth because that's what's live right now. And you want to get away from that. Most of you want to get away from that, I assume. And you want to get into this modeled state. Now, inside of NetBox or InfraHub or anything.
That is where the model represents what. It isn't reality, but it is the truth I wish was reality or should be reality. Yeah,
exactly. And that, of course, allows you to do things like monitoring billing events and that sort of thing. Like you turned on an interface over here on this router and you had a change request. You had all these adjacent systems like your change monitoring, your actual live network monitoring. But the beautiful thing about the source of truth is you should always be able to look at that and go, this is what actually should be. Like, this is what this customer has, or this is what we're supposed to have deployed here. Why isn't it the way it's supposed to be? Now, the tooling for that, actually, there's some really exciting stuff, and it should be announced now, coming directly out of NetBox Labs, which is their synchronization platform. And there's more coming on that soon, so I'm not going to jump the horse on that one. But a simple way to do it is simply just step one, get yourself an intern, right? Just go to the local university, pick up one or two interns, you know, and put them to work on scraping your current setup, so your monitoring system. Get that SNMP data, parse it, and populate your device counts. That way you have your device names, your model types, your interface counts, that sort of stuff. Really basic, but that's when you're kind of read-only, or you're going like, there's terminology that's been thrown around. That's NetBox leading or NSOT, right? Network source of truth leading or trailing data. So you could be trailing on certain information, like you could be trailing on the devices that are in the network. Like you don't ever add a device to NetBox directly, like type in the name in the field and that sort of thing. You put it into the monitoring system with hopefully the correct name, and then that gets sucked up into NetBox. That way you're able to. Yeah,
you talked about a source of truth. We're using NetBox as an example. There are others, InfraHub, Nautobot, others. But you sort of, I feel like we hand waved a little bit about just get your SMP and SNMP and it goes right into NetBox. And I imagine it's not that easy. So can we unhand wavy a little bit the actual process of getting data from, say, a monitoring system into this model that we're trying to build?
Yeah, absolutely. So like in most cases, you're going to have some custom endpoints and you're going to want to hit up the REST API or some sort of API that's in your, you're going to have to do this custom most of the time. Now, there are some import tools, like you could use, again, some of those third-party tools that are actually in the, I believe it's the discovery section. Some of them have integrations built in directly into NetBox or InfraHub or whatever, right? And that means that they actually handle the discovery for you. So they might either connect to your SNMP monitoring, or they might actually just do their discovery. So you put in some IP address ranges, and then they start scanning and discovering for you. And that means they're doing the modeling and moving their view of the model into your source of truth, right? So some of the cool ones I've used is IP Fabric, for example, the really great, really great stuff. Like they have a full, the benefit of, so this is where we get into multi-vendor versus single vendor. If you're doing single vendor, you're going to have a much easier time of just pulling it in directly or using the vendor's tooling and then, you know, getting that stuff populated. Versus if you're in multi-vendor, you're going to need a sort of meta model, right? You're going to need something in between that takes, hey, this is a Juniper device and this is a Cisco device, and this parses both configs or SNMP data or what have you, and then you translate that and push that into NetBox. And again, this is a this is a read-only centric model. And of course, the easiest way to do this most of the time, and this is my favorite tool, this is the one trick that they don't tell you. Excel is amazing at working with REST APIs. Now, what you can just do is you can just go into the query data and you can just dump raw JSON into this thing and it'll turn into tables and columns for you in no time. And that's a really good way of just, hey, you go and find your SNMP monitoring solution, you find the API that shows you all the devices and all the subfields, and then you just dump that into Excel, and that's your first step, right? You start looking at, hey, these are the fields that I'm getting from this particular monitoring system. They might be represented differently in other monitoring systems, but that way you can actually start, you know, getting your initial population of data, you know, which is device names and serial numbers, which are, again, serial numbers are really important because keying on names is very dangerous. So keying, I mean, the uniqueness of a device, you're going to want a serial number because that's a really good way to do a universal lookup inside of your system, because so far with 40,000 devices, I've never had a duplicate serial number issue, and they're very different between vendors, thankfully, right? So keying on that and having, instead of thinking about the name of the device as the primary attribute that identifies it and using the serial numbers, oh boy, you're going to have such a way better time. But again, like you said, there's a lot of hand waving, and that's because now we're in it depends territory. Does it make sense for you to actually read from the monitoring system, or does it make sense for you to actually just populate from your either existing?
There are discovery tools too, though. Right. I mean, you're talking about using your MMS because, okay, I've got that, but you mentioned IP Fabric. There's Slurpit is out there, does that. Suzy Q can do some discovery. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to get data in there that don't involve, I'm going to dump it to Excel so I can format it appropriately and then import it into NetBox, which is what I think you're describing. That's roughly the process you're describing.
Right. Which is, the Excel dump. Again, I'm not saying I ever recommend any of my insane methods. However, you're going to be able to move a lot faster at taking a look at your data just by raw dumping it and getting it into columns, honestly, rather than learning a tool like Suzy Q and deploying it and populating it with your passwords. And again, in an enterprise context, giving a tool your passwords is very production-y, right? As opposed to something in the lab.
Yep.
Now, getting a raw dump of JSON data and putting that into Excel, well, nobody's going to blink twice, right? So that's kind of, and you can see where my world is colored from, right? I have a lot of change tickets and I have a lot of approvals I need to get if I want to put in a tool versus if I want to just raw read stuff. So that's kind of the difference between,
I'm curious why Excel is not then here on your list under network source of truth or system of records. Should it be here?
It is every paycheck that, like, anyone who laughs at Excel, I will fight you in the parking lot because all your paychecks depend on Excel at some point. So show some respect, and it's big brother Power BI, even though it's a little weird. Excel is like one of the fundamental tooling. Like, honestly, what's really needed is an Excel course for network engineers, because there are like a top 10 tricks list. As soon as you know them, you're able to do a lot of amazing things in like 20 minutes that would otherwise require you to onboard an open source project, import that thing, install the plugin into your source of truth, which is a multi-day, multi-week versus 30 minutes, right? So it depends on
Something else about Excel as a tool, then. You mentioned it's got some API capabilities. Is that to go pull data from an API, do a pull from the REST API? Can I also populate NetBox via REST via API as well from Excel?
I would not recommend that anyone ever, because of the complications around the column names and the column types, you should never, ever raw populate your... actually, you could. I'm not going to say, I'm not a cop. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I would just say, be very careful, because time, dates, currencies, that sort of things, and decimal values are very dangerous, and you will blow your foot off at some point. You know, you think you're going to read in all the end of life information for this vendor or that vendor and do some stuff, right? Time, dates alone, you're going to want to outsource that probably. But again, I like the moxie. I like it when people try stuff. You know, getting burned is half the experience, right? So, you know what not to do, right? So, but again, we've really entered hand wavy territory, right? How do we pull and push data? Should we be reading from this? Should we be reading from that? What is our, so this, another piece of terminology was here, system of record, which is, I believe it was coined by the network automation, oh, I forget the name of the book, but it's the NTC network automation book. It's a beautiful book, beautiful book. Chapter 14 has this wonderful layout diagrams and that sort of thing. So I have links to that in the show notes. The reader is highly encouraged to just thumb through chapter 14 because it's a beautiful, you know, you might disagree with some of the terminology that's used and be like, well, actually, I would do it this way. That's amazing. That's wonderful. But it's a wonderful starting point in any sort of discussion between two individuals to just read chapter 14 of that book. So they do a nice overview of the architecture. They say, you know, this is your telemetry arm. This is your this and that. You have your users on the top, you know, you have some nice diagrams. It's great stuff. But that brings us back to like the landscape of how we should be, you know, we could do an entire episode on really data manipulation and churning data from point A to point B. But more interestingly,
I don't know. I also feel like starting with a source of truth for automation and all of that is kind of like, okay, you must have graduated from college. Let's get into the master's degree. In the sense that where most of us started with automation was not, I'm going to build a system, a platform that we can deliver automation for our network. And we're all going to share and we're all going to use it. No. How did we start? We probably wrote some Python scripts that lived on our local machines and it got some specific task done and helped us get something done more quickly. Is that a no-no at this point, Steinzy?
Oh, God, no. I would never tell anyone not to do some weird stuff locally. In fact, I highly, like just this morning, I did some really weird stuff locally with a little bit of Excel and some CSV files and a little bit of Python. And you can get, you know, you got to get your day job done. Number one, right? You know, you work at a business or you work somewhere, right? So you're a network engineer. If you can get that done locally, God, wonderful, right? So this is kind of tier two stuff, right? Getting into the whole platform thing and getting, you know, that's when we're going from the single engineer to the, you know, 40 man team to the 100 man team, right? Or person team. So when we're moving from your local computer to something that's actually shared and used by multiple people and where you need traceability and accountability, that's where we get into stuff like AWX and some of the platforms like Itential or something like that, right? So we're moving away from the I'm just trying to get this job done to I'm trying to offer this particular workflow. Again, when you're trying to get your jobs done, you're getting a little piece of a process, right? So maybe it's onboarding a new customer or offboarding a new customer. And there's a lot of variables and there's a lot of this, that, and the other. And you might be doing a little bit piece that you're going to have to do every single time, right? You're going to find that repetitive task, that low-hanging fruit. Wonderful. Getting to the platform stage where you have this centralized, governed by your organization as a whole thing, that's the big leap, right? That's the, you need investment from, you know, your stakeholders, you got to get approval for this, that, and the other. You're going to need a team, you know, you're going to need an A team, right? And you're going to need, you know, a couple of kids that can sling some Python for you on the side. I would highly recommend get some kids that can, you know, students are cheap, right? You go to the university, you tell them, hey, just, you know, we'll give them a research project and their bachelor degree if they do this, that, and the other. And then you can get a proof of concept. Then you throw away their code because it's university student code. You throw it in the trash. And that means, you know, it can be done. So highly recommend that approach. It may have been perpetrated on me at some point, and I might have learned something and I might have discovered that that's a good trick. But as you said, population of data, managing to go from, you know, that day zero, I just want to get it done. Mm-hmm. I got to go home at 4. I need a script that puts in the config at 4 a.m. for my change ticket. That's beautiful, right? But that's a single person endeavor, right? If you're going to try and share that script or something breaks in the middle of the night, they're going to have to call you, right? If you're going to give an intern, you know, that script that you created on your machine locally, you're also going to be sharing credentials. You're going to be sharing inventory information, like which devices to touch, et cetera. And you're not going to have auditability and traceability of who ran what, when, and where, because you ran it locally, right?
So are we kind of mapping out two paths here? On one, I'm sort of going all in on, you know, sort of a prepackaged enterprise solution, an Itential, a Glueware, a Plianta, whatever. It's got a bunch of stuff I might need and I can start doing things versus a DIY path where maybe I started with some Python scripts and then I want to model my network. So I go and get a source of truth or a system of record. And then I also got to plug in some discovery and assurance tools and so on, but I can build it myself. But are we talking about two divergent paths here, or do they eventually come back around together?
Oh, they're more than two. And, you know, they leap over each other and they go back and forth. And I highly recommend that, you know, if, depending on the monetary situation, right? If you go out and buy these super duper processes and projects, or, you know, the iTentials of the world.
Commercial products, yeah.
Heavy duty enterprise stuff, right? They're amazing. If your processes aren't in place and haven't been, congealed to be conducive to automation, meaning you know which variables you're going to get from the sales team, like you're going to get the name of the customer, you're going to get the site location, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been through that, through this mini script phase, the only way to do that jump is to either hire contractors. So you could go with like a contracting firm like Network to Code, or, you know, there's a lot of these shops that, you know, come in and they apply what they've learned. And that's the fastest way to do it than grow it in-house most of the time. Mm-hmm. It also costs a lot of money. Yep. You know, I've gotten quotes and I'm like, whew, I can get some college students and let's just do the little bits. And we figure out our process that we want to automate. And then you can use either the scripty free stuff, or you can use the heavy duty enterprise stuff, but you're also going to have to do a lot of customization on, or, you know, applying your business logic and thinking onto that platform. And right. That is a whole endeavor on its own. So starting with either, I come back to the CCDE answer. It depends, which is really, really
classic answer.
I'm so sorry that for the listener that I can't give them like a, you should do this and always do that. There is no such answer. And anyone who is, you know, selling that sort of schwill, you shouldn't listen to that person. And also don't listen to me. I am wrong all the time. I told you many times. But as you said, there were multiple paths, right? And it kind of sounds like it's two. It's the script one, freebie, and then there's the enterprise one. However, if you start with the scripty free one and you start going through the landscape and you start seeing, okay, you know, maybe I want to do some Terraform, or, you know, you start discovering, right? That means you're getting organizational knowledge about both the entire industry of network automation, which is an extension of just general networking, right? But it also starts crossing in with a lot of other, you know, disciplines like, you know, virtualization and all the wonderful things that are happening with the containerization is going to be a huge part of any automation platform or any sort of project that you're doing, because we have some incredible tools that are, you know, popping up like Container Lab and that sort of thing, that, what, you know, it wasn't possible to do the kind of testing that you can do these days. It's all very difficult. Like, I don't want to make it sound like, if anyone is listening to this and thinking, oh man, this sounds so easy, like, oh, Steins has got to figure out, my friend, I do not. Like, this is hard stuff.
To that point, if I'm looking at your network automation landscape document, mm-hmm. and I scroll down to the automation tooling section and then look at automation platforms and management, there's something like 20 different tools here that fit into this category, but they're not, I think it's important to let people know that they're not all the same. They don't all do the same. They are all in the same category, but there's a lot of variation in what these things accomplish, what they're best at, what they're focused on, what comes with them out of the box. Glueware is not the same as iTential, which is not the same as Backbox, which is not the same as Pliant, which is not the same as Cisco NSO, etc.
Sure.
Which is exactly the thing, right? And that's why the categories are very much an evolving thing, right? But you can stick some of them together with certain aspects, which is general orchestration of process, right? So a lot of these can, like NSO, for example, that can hold a certain part of your business process as code inside of that platform, right? So you populate some sort of thing that's going to do XYZ, right? And that's part of this whole platform or this process. And if you're able to encode business processes into a tool, that's when I kind of start sticking them together for some of the things. But as you said, they're differently architected. They come from different teams. They have different focuses. Some of them are very network engineer oriented. Some of them are very DevOps-y / programmer oriented, right? And you can kind of see it in the DNA of the product when you're using it. Like, hey, definitely a network engineer had something to do with this when it has a certain feel. It's a flavor, right? And you can't get away from it. And you know, anyone who's been through this standard, you know, I do the networking and then I do the CCA or some, you know, expert level certs, and then they move to the automation part, or someone coming from a programming standpoint, you're going to be colored by your experiences. And the fact is that, you know, these are products or projects with different teams that have different focuses. However, there is an underlying thread in most of them. It allows you to put in some sort of starting event or something that's a either a continuously running collector versus a process that gets kicked off. And again, we're in such a heavy it depends territory. This is what me and Urs and some of the people over at the NAF forum and a lot of time is spent discussing the minutia of vendor A versus vendor B versus project C. And it is hard to come up with these categories. That's why I told you they were a little bit deceptive, these categories. They sound like they're legit, but when you really start digging into it, you start to see that, you know, hey, there's a limitation of what you can do with a 2x2 grid, right? Like
I feel like, you know, if we equate network automation to an expedition, this is sort of like partly a map and partly a list of supplies you might want to consider. You, the person, still have to hike up that mountain. You know, if you're going to start the journey, okay, I need a good pair of shoes, probably want to bring some water, et cetera. I feel like this network automation landscape is giving me a sense of what I should expect and some things I should think about. Do I want to start with a source of truth? How is my discovery or my assurance capabilities? Do I need to get telemetry, or is that something I do down the line, et cetera? So it is like, because if you're just going into this without any kind of guide or documentation or even, you know, just a little map, this is so useful to just give you a sense of what should I expect out of this whole process.
Exactly. Like, the main hope for this is the fact that it's a continually living document, right? Like, there's no way to come down with the 10 commandments down from the hill and go, this is the stuff of network automation. Like, it changes every 15 minutes, my guy. So yeah, we're going to be moving stuff around there. And I encourage the listeners, I'm going to have updated the README with more specific steps on how to add and change stuff, because some people don't know how to do pull requests, which is perfectly fine. And that's part of the journey, right? It's getting a little bit of that GitOps magic going, and learning a little bit of Git, and learning a little bit of Python, and learning a little bit of this and that. And that's, you know, you've got to do that greedy discovery. You know, you've got to put all your little fingers out in all the different directions. And there are many, many pies. And that's kind of the idea of the landscape, is to be able to have at least, you know, a brief description, tags with capabilities like configuration backup, or, you know, discovery, or, you know, general discovery versus, you know, raw, just full-blown modeling like IP Fabric would do. You know, you can't really equate the discovery that IP Fabric does with the discovery of, let's say, an SNMP-based monitoring tool, because they're taking the config and then creating a meta, you know, a complete model on top, and then saying, hey, this is how the MPLS path goes, you know, multi-vendor, that sort of thing. And there's a lot of it depends, right? So, but I like the analogy. I'm going to steal that about the supplies and the map thing, though.
Please do.
Yes. Having built this document and having some level of familiarity with the projects and the commercial products that are on here, mm-hmm. how do you feel about the tooling platforms and so on that's available for network automators now? Do we have everything we need and we can pull the system together, or do you think there's still some holes?
Oh, I mean, we're always going to have some holes, right? Like, you know, we've had Linux since the 90s, but we keep having to, you know, redo that whole adventure every so often, how we're going to handle our automation tooling. So we have tools that we inherited from other places in the industry, such as, you know, we got Ansible as a, hey, it's a great way to manage independent Linux hosts in the and install updates, right? We got Terraform, very cloud oriented, you know, this is how I provision infrastructure. So we have these, all of these tooling coming in, and it's up to us to also make it network oriented, right? So a lot of the stuff is very general, you know, computer science-y type things, just like database, working with databases, you know, being able to do a couple of SQL queries. So like, one of the best skills that you'll ever learn is being able to do some SQL queries, because that's a very, very powerful tool. And it's not a network engineering tool, right? But you can use it as a network engineering tool by creating, again, network engineering.
Very portable knowledge. Skill as well, right? To all kinds of IT disciplines, just understanding fundamental SQL queries. Yeah,
exactly. So we always come back to fundamentals. And, you know, I like to borrow Russ White's old, you know, fundamentals drum. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can try to build on top of, you know, an existing infrastructure, an existing roadmap or whatever. But if you don't understand how the pieces align and which, you know, if they're like, if you were to open up some of these Python libraries that are listed there, they don't talk about networking at all. Like DiffSync, for example, is a fun one. Like, let's say that you have data source A and you have NetBox, for example. Data source A and NetBox, and you have the records on both ends. You want to detect the difference between these two systems. That's a very fundamental thing that you want to do, is just be able to say, hey, there's been a change and I got to update a record. This is a beautiful library for doing that. There's also a million other ways to do that particular task. And that's kind of what we're seeing with, you know, I'm going to caution, I got to beat the AI drum, right? Be very careful with what you put into your prompts. Go ask the AI, wonderful stuff. You know, if you want to learn about adjacent fields and how they're, you know, doing similar problems, LLMs are amazing at analogies and figuring out basically, oh, I have this problem. This is very similar to this domain in general computer science or in cloud networking. And then you can go down the rabbit hole a little bit over there. So one of those examples is, you know, if I go to you, if I go to a general network engineer and I go, I would like Argo CD for networking. They're going to go, what is wrong with this man? And how did he break into my house? That's what they're going to say, right? But what I mean by that is I want to be able to have a universal configuration language, a state map, you know, a way of speaking about network state and being able to have a traffic cop in the middle that looks at the network devices, looks at the stuff that I have in my general language and goes, hey, there's been a change in the live environment, or there's been a change in the, let's say, the this universal language file thing, and it's going to keep that in sync automatically for me. So if I push it, it automatically pushes it to the network, and it easily rolls back in the event of certain failures and certain tests failing. And that's what I mean by I want Argo CD for networking, right? Now, that comes from the Kubernetes space, and they have certain advantages that we don't. They don't struggle with the multi-vendor. Well, they have multi-projects, multiple projects and certain customizations, that type of stuff, but they have certain things, certain advantages that the Linux, I call them the Linux people, the container people, and the Kubernetes people, they have a certain common language and framework that we do not have, right, in the multi-vendor space. And this came up at Autocon, right? You know, this general need for a universal API or something like that. And we're never going to get that from the vendors, honestly. And, you know, Dinesh over at SuzyQ is, I wholeheartedly agree with how pessimistic he is about that. And but the thing is, you can't just expect the community to just, oh, yes, and then we created the thing. You know, Terraform, Ansible, you name it, right? You know, the Kubernetes language, it all came about from big business drivers, right? Yeah. If you're going to think a bunch of hippies hanging out in a Slack channel or going to a conference twice a year is going to be able to drive something like that, I hope that happens, right? But I'm not going to, you know, hold my breath for that. And I would suggest that the listener also not wait for anything, right? You know, I'm not going to go full network check on you and go, you got to do this right now, right? No, just deep breaths, slow and steady wins the race. Keep exploring the different options, see what's hype, see what names keep coming back, like stuff like TextFSM or other projects, right? And you, again, this is kind of, you know, oh, Steinzy, how do I know, like, where do I, if you click on anything there, like, let's say PyATS or something like that, if you click on anything on that landscape map, your first stop should not be to read the description or anything like that. It's to go check out the number of commits on that particular, if there's a repo, check out the number of commits. Check out the stars on the repo, although those are being gamed very hard by certain projects. Check out the stars, check out the commits, see who's updating it, when and why. If it's a lively project, if it's a dead project, some of the dead ones are very good. Like they don't need to be updated. They're that fundamentally good. They just need an update every 2 or 3 years. Go check out what's happening in the background. Go check out their Slack community, you know, go poke around. And again, listen to people who give you recommendations. Like if I go, hey, DiffSync is amazing, but it's very slow. Like, you know, if you're doing 30,000, 50,000 records and you're going to use DiffSync, you're going to be running that thing. It's going to be very, very slow. And you're going to have to do a lot of parallel processing. So if you're going to check system A versus system B, I would use SQL any day of the week and then send it to DiffSync. So that's the trick, right? So it's, there's a lot of trickery. There's a lot of, you know, general computer science stuff. It's okay to ask questions. So that's why the packet pusher Slack, or, you know, the NAF Slack. And I'm not going to tell people to go into more Slack channels, because I have like 45 in my bar right now. You have to scroll in your Slack bar. It's time to cut some ropes, okay? It's time to burn some leave some communities and just get out. Because if I have like 45 partner vendor Slack channels and God knows what, right? But it's really good to ask questions. And like personally, like over the past 2 or 3 years, answering questions, like I've been hanging around a lot in the NetBox Slack, just because I work a lot with NetBox. That's what we're using right now. And answering and seeing the theme of the repeated questions that keep coming in. And, you know, that's a really good place to both see what other people are doing and also what maybe you shouldn't do, which is also just as valuable, right? It's, if you ask an AI to, hey, how can I do X? It'll respond with, oh boy, sure, this is how you can do da da da. And it might be the worst idea ever, and it will not stop you, right? Versus, hopefully some of the time on Slack, some kind soul will go, listen, buddy, I can see where you're going. You know, you could just walk around the mountain. You don't have to climb Everest, right? Like, oh, it's knowing what not to do.
That's a good point.
So, Steinsy, we've been talking about the network automation forum along the way here quite a bit, and mentioned AutoCon. And for those of you that aren't familiar, AutoCon is a series of conferences. We just finished the third AutoCon event in Denver in November of 2024. AutoCon 3, which will be the fourth AutoCon event, because we started at zero. That's going to be happening in Europe in probably late May 2025. We don't have the dates yet. I know the NAV team is working on that, procuring a venue in the city and so on. Steins, are you planning on going to AutoCon 3?
Oh, you can keep me away even with they've already filed the restraining orders. They won't be able to stop. By this time, it should be out that it's Prague. So unless it's not Prague right now, that means something terrible has gone wrong. But no, I look forward to seeing you in Czechoslovakia. We're going to have a real good time. But again, like conferences, this is a very important thing. And not everyone can go to conferences, which is why the videos are important. But the real value is kind of what happens in the hallway most of the time.
Yep. Yeah. Hallway track is fantastic at the Network Automation Forum AutoCon events, for sure. Because you get a bunch of people in the room who are in various places. You get people that are very mature in their network automation journey. They've been doing it for a while. They've built a platform. They've made some mistakes. They know some things. They have opinions. And you got people that are there because trying to figure it out. I'm not sure exactly where we want to go, but you want to talk to some vendors with some tooling. You want to talk to some people who've built some things and kind of get some direction. And so they're really good events that you can go to. And the last two actually have sold out. I fully expect that the next event here in May is going to sell out as well, because they're capped events. There's not room for infinite attendees, because then you need a really big venue if you just have everybody show up.
And it's all Las Vegas all the time. Yeah. And
we don't which is no fun.
Nobody needs to go to Vegas any more than they already do. Okay. You've been once, you never need to go back there. Also, I'll be scalping AutoCon tickets, like best investment ever. Just buy 10 tickets early on. Scalp those things. You're gonna like Chris and Scott are gonna kill me for this, but like I'm telling you should screw crypto, guys. We should go buy AutoCon tickets. Like the people were offering $500 on top of the ticket value. Like I was looking at that thing going like, really, I'm gonna pay for my house. FOMO is real, guys. FOMO is real. the conference is amazing. I highly recommend it. Don't take anything too seriously, but also just to highlight the fact that we live in what's unique about this particular time that we're in compared to previous generations of network automations, which happened in the 90s and the early 2000s and 2010s, is that everything that everyone is doing has already been done by a large ISP in a very particular manner. Like, you know, your syncs, your data sources, all this stuff has already been done, but it was done in closed doors, right? Now we have this industry and, you know, people are actually coming from PayPal and all these big enterprises and telling about discussing their journey and why they picked this and that. This is a unique time to be able to learn from other people's mistakes and also just, you know, how to, you know, not get hit directly in the face when life throws you a curveball. You can learn so much just by both being in the hallway tracks, watching the video, seeing, you know, the general theme of, you know, this is the kind of architectural structure that seems to be, you know, the general consensus, right? This is what's unique about the current time. Also, the abundance availabilities of, you know, training tutorials above, and then we got the AI stuff, right? You know, you can actually
get
a tutor, a pretty good tutor, so long as you're asking relatively simple questions and you don't go, make an automation app for me that does blah, 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 blah. You're going to get garbage, right? But you can actually have a pretty decent tutor, especially Claude. Claude AI, just those boys are killing it over there. Really good product right now. So you can have stuff like the, you know, like just going over all the things. If you want to get into network automation, the Python client that you, or you know the development environment that you're using, my God, it's such a large adjacent field that you need to cover. And just being able to talk to a few people in a Slack channel or at a conference and seeing how the, hey, why is your IDE set up like that? And you have got those fancy blinking lights and stuff. Just that is a huge value. So, you know, managers, send your people to Autocon, but don't send too many people because otherwise we'll have to go to Vegas. And I'm not going back to Vegas, baby. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas and I ain't going back.
Steinzy, this has been fun, man. So thanks a lot for coming on Heavy Networking today. And we're going to have links in the show notes for this episode. The Network Automation Landscape is what we're going to call this. And search for Steinzy, the Network Automation Landscape. You'll find this episode. We'll have links to the Network Automation Landscape at steinzy.com, steinzi.com. And you can find it from there and look through the very many projects and products and so on that Steinzy has so graciously shared with everybody out there. And maybe you can update it too by doing a pull request and seeing what you think should be added to the Network Automation Landscape doc. We'll also have links to Network Automation Forum, Network Automation Talks, because if you can't go to the AutoCon events, because yeah, the reality is most people aren't going to be able to make it. They do get posted to YouTube. We'll have a link to the channel there, or just go up to YouTube and search for Network Automation Forum. Thank you very much for listening to today's episodes. You folks listening, yeah, we know you're scattered all over the globe. We know everybody celebrates the holidays in whatever way you do. And so whatever your tradition is, we wish you from Packet Pushers the very best. Heavy Networking is taking a couple of weeks away from the microphones, but we already have shows for 2025 in development. The history of SD-WAN from the perspective of a founder who helped create one of the biggest SD-WAN companies there was is coming up. The challenges of networking in the Bahamas, hurricane engineering, basically, that's coming up. What's going on with the Ultra Ethernet Consortium? That's coming up. That's on the books. And if we're lucky, the state of the CCIE in 2025, trying to get the guest to commit. He's a friend of mine, but he's a very busy human. Not sure he's going to be able to make it or not, but hopefully we're going to get that show to land. So from me, Drew, and all of us at Packet Pushers, thanks for a great 2024. We will see you in 2025. Be safe, spend time with loved ones, enjoy a bourbon barrel-aged stout, and set ridiculous future goals, and keep being awesome. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.